Welcome back. The Supreme Court recently rejected an electoral map drawn by a Texas judge. Florida's legislature is plotting a new map for that state. It'll include the two new congressional districts. In Chicago, Mayor Emanuel and Chicago's aldermen recently worked out a new ward map in a horse trading session behind closed doors in the dead of the night. Maps count, but when was the last time you looked at one, not online? If it's been a while, we've got a suggestion. The map that took the top prize, best of show, at last year's Cartography and Geographic Information Society competition. Past winners have included National Geographic, the CIA, the U.S. Census Bureau, big guns in the cartography world. But the newest winner? A guy named Dave Imus. He joins us now from the studios of Don Ross Productions in Eugene, Oregon. Dave, welcome and congratulations.
Thank you, Robin. It's nice to talk to you.
Well, people are making a big deal about this. You know, wow, look at this. Imus Geographics won. What's Imus Geographics? It's one guy named Dave Imus. How long did you spend making this?
Oh, you know, about as long as it takes to write a long novel. I worked on it 7 days a week, 10 or 12 hours pretty much every day for 2 years. So, you know, it was at least 5,000 hours, but I'm guessing it was more like 6,000 hours of time. I collaborate with Pat Dunleavy in Williamstown, Massachusetts. Pat puts together all this data, you know, road locations and shorelines and things like that. What it allows me to do is trace that data and analyze it as I'm going and try to render a map that somebody can read. So every time I'm drafting a road or putting a type label on it or something like that, I ask myself, if I wasn't me, would I be able to understand this? Would I be able to read it?
Well, then that's what people who are raving about your map say. Journalist Seth Stevenson writes in Slate that it's masterful and that you spend hours picking font types, letter thicknesses, levels of colors and shading, instead of making each state a different color. You spent your time on, let's say, showing how there might be denser forestation by levels of green, or how there might be yellow areas that are higher population centers.
What I did differently than anybody else who ever made a map of the United States was that I brought into focus the principal elements of the United States, the basic geography. People that read this map or look at it on the wall can understand and appreciate more deeply the character of the United States, just to understand this country, the lay of the land. This map treats the character of each state so that we can distinguish one state from another by its unique geographic character instead of by these arbitrary colors that one might assign to them.
You're one guy, so you sort of have control over this and you make personal decisions about what you want to do.
That's a key point. Rand McNally and National Geographic, for sure, has been publishing the same U.S. map for many decades. Somebody like me comes along, and I'm this artist living out in the boonies. I've got the freedom to make any kind of map I want to. So I looked at those maps, and I noticed that we didn't have a United States map that made our geography understandable. So I endeavored to do that.
Well, and you've done that, but also I'm looking at Chicago, and you've included, oh, look, there's Wrigley Field and a little icon where Northwestern University would be and, oh, Grant Park. But I see when I compare it, let's say, to the National Geographic map, you had to give up the town of South Haven, which would have been there. No offense to anyone in South Haven, but that's kind of cool that there's Wrigley Field. So you made those choices, it seems.
You know, I did because, you know, Wrigley Field is an essential part of Chicago. It's part of what makes Chicago, Chicago. In blogs and on my Facebook page and stuff, some people took me to task for eliminating populated places in deference to landmarks like that. But if you were looking at a map of Egypt and it had a bunch of towns on it but didn't include the pyramids, wouldn't you think, hey, wouldn't the pyramids have told us something about Egypt that a bunch of place name labels doesn't tell? And so that I made this decision to show 1,000 iconic American landmarks that people have heard of, but that have just been completely overlooked on U.S. maps. I'm talking about basic things, you know, like the Statue of Liberty and the Alamo and, you know, the San Andreas Fault and the Iditarod Trail. I mean, these things we've heard of that are overlooked, but they're Americana. They're the things that make Americans who they are and tie us together as a country.
How did you get started? Why this passion for maps?
I don't know. You know, both my parents are very geographically oriented people. In fact, the best geographic editor, the best fact checker that I could find to look at my maps before they got published are my mother. So, you know, I've just had this background of geography, and my dad taught me to be a real seat-of-the-pants navigator. We used to go hiking in the mountains to lakes and things, which sometimes required map and compass to get to.
It's funny, just even talking about this has sort of stirred something in me. I remember when I was young, I sent away to, I think it was Mobil Gas or something. I wanted to take a cross-country trip, and they would send you a book with the maps of, you know, how you should drive. And when you were talking about putting the icons on your map of the Alamo, I was thinking, the Alamo. You'd love to go see the Alamo. But do you think that this is an endangered feeling? Most people are traveling sitting at home on their computer.
Well, there's two basic kinds of maps, and Americans are very familiar with maps that are aids to navigation. And that's what Google Maps are, and that's what those mobile maps were. And they are very valuable tools. Even though the Google map that I printed out to help me find this studio in a sort of remote location in Eugene, Oregon, was wrong, and I had to I had to use the written instructions that were provided to find the place. But the other kind of map, the type of map that Americans really have never had, is maps that help us understand the lay of the land, where things are relative to each other, and how all these elements of roads and rivers and cities and mountains and forests and lakes and on go together to create this fabric or tapestry.
Well, now you've got me thinking about that map in whatever it was, fourth grade, fifth grade. It was raised so you could actually put your hand on it where the mountains were and you could actually feel them. But do you worry that maps are going to become a thing of the past?
The maps that are aids to navigation, perhaps, but I don't think that maps like I've made of the United States will be a thing of the past, because they do allow us to let it really sink in that just how big and spread out and wonderful and fascinating our country is, that you're never going to get on a computer screen until those screens perhaps match the resolution of a printed map.
Well, what happens now? You spent 2 years, 6,000 hours. Was there a cash prize that came with this award? I'm hoping. Was there?
Oh, don't I wish. You know, map makers are so low-key. The organization that held the competition, you know, they didn't even send out a press release. Could you imagine? Couldn't you imagine Hollywood having the Academy Awards and not telling anybody?
Well,
so, you know, I'm trying to change that, too, you know, try to get maps kind of out there.
Well, we'll do our little part. Dave Imus of Imus Geographics, but don't be fooled. We've just heard from Imus Geographics, all of it, who created the map, The Essential Geography of the United States. It took top prize, best of show at last year's Cartography and Geographic Information Society competition, and we'll link you to everything you need to know at hereandnow.org. Dave, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin. It's been fun.